Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, thank you for supporting the Tigers Minor League Report. Thanks to a loyal listener idea, he provided a GoFundMe that has supported our travels in 2023 and pay for website costs. If you are interested in supporting our site, please consider donating to our PayPal. You can find the link in the show's description or on our website. If you want to donate monthly, we have a Patreon you can join as well. The goal is to raise money to continue our work. Hopefully, we can go to spring training in 2024 or possibly even the Arizona Fall League. Once again, thank you for supporting the Tigers Minor League Report.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Tigers Minor League Report podcast here at TigersMLReport.com. I'm Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is nobody. Right now, as it stands, there might not be Chris Brown tonight. So for the first time, I've done over, it's not a humble brag or anything, I'm trying to think. I've done over 300 podcasts in my entire career doing this. And I've never done one by myself solo for more than 5-10 minutes. And Chris said there might be a chance you might miss tonight. We're going to pull this together. If anybody's watching live right now on YouTube, and if you're listening at home, thanks for listening. And we have a lot to get to. We got the slides to present, so don't worry about that. And it's been a busy week in terms of the offense for Toledo. It was one of those weeks where there's football scores, literally football scores scored between the Louisville Bats and the Toledo Mudhens. Erie split the series with Bowie, and West Michigan suffered a series of heartbreaking one-run losses in Lakeland. We got some history today as Clark hit his first double of his Lakeland career, so that took place, and we'll get all into that tonight. So thank you for everybody who's participating in YouTube, and of course thank you for supporting us on our super chats. The extra content I promise will be coming this week. It's been I had a bronchial virus funk thing coming from Thursday, so yeah, it's been a fun, pleasant day. So I haven't been able to go to the ballpark because I'm not one of those people that wants to get masses of people's get the people sick, if you will. So, but let's get into the slides this week, and let's get right into it. Well, that's actually last week's slide. So let me upload the slides. Like I said, doing things by myself here, but yeah, Toledo this week was an offensive juggernaut, and it was again impressive to see the Astros just scored again. Yes, the Astros kicked the Tigers' ass today. No bones about it. There's no other way to say it, but yeah, there's no polite way of saying what happened today with Detroit and Houston. At least they won the first game. Parker Meadows had a dramatic home run on Friday, and Saturday's game was a little anticlimactic, but still. But Toledo, 68 runs off bats pitching. 68 runs. They scored 24, and they went 24. They won a game 24-10 on Tuesday, which was the most runs the Bats have given up in their history. And Louisville has been around for a long time. If I'm saying Louisville incorrectly, please let me know, because I know there's two ways to say it, and I may be saying it incorrectly. And I think Keefe has turned a corner. I would agree with that. And we'll get to Cole Keefe in a second, because I want to pause and catch my breath. It is Cole Keefe's week. He went 11-for-24. Three home runs, batted a cool .458. His, ironically enough, I think his bat pip was something insane too. And we're gonna pull some Keefe. We're gonna run a lot of highlights today, because without my show here is it's just me. And Stan, thank you for the $9.99.
Off the Frickers building.
Exquisite,
much appreciated. Yeah, Cole Keefe today was one of the things about Cole Keefe is we get this question all the time. how come he's not getting called up, when he's getting called up. And you have to kind of look at this point. I said this about Parker Meadows 2 weeks before it happened, that he looked like he was ready. And when we talked to Scott Harris this week at the ballpark, it was one of those moments where he said that the legs and the defense was there. It was just waiting on the bat, and the bat caught up. We saw that on Friday. We saw a really good defensive play, I believe also on Friday too, in center field. And I think with Cole Keith, it's where you're going to put him. Now, I think, again, he has been fine at second base. He's been serviceable at second base. There's a room for it now. But I think what's going to happen is, I think Mason Agler is eligible to return. He's going to get a roster spot. Then you have to figure out, well, Cole Keith, well, I mean, he's a logical choice. He should get that 40-man spot. But then who gets the call up September 1st? That's the question. So do you give that to Keith, or do you give that to Justin Henry Molloy, who also had a good week? He's still learning how to play the outfield. Scott Harris mentioned this earlier in the week that he wants him getting some more time there in the outfield. And so that brings up an interesting dilemma. You let Molloy just finish out the season, just getting more reps in the outfield, because you bring him up to Detroit, there's really no room for him. But Winsteel Perez, we'll get to him in a second. But let me just give you example of the power of Cole Keith. And the thing is, every time he calls up, every single time he hits a home run, we get that call. You get that. Where is he? Boom. Look at that. Draws his hands in, just put the barrel on the bat, and just boom. 103 off the bat, too. Great home run there. And then, but then you have Winsteel Perez. Winsteel Perez had six doubles this week. Six doubles. And in the month of, and I tweeted this out earlier today from the account, he is having a month. He's batted 316, 455, 645 with an OPS over 1,000 and a WRC plus of 168. He's hit 11 doubles this month. Six of them came off Louisville pitching. That's pretty funny. The only problem, though, is it's the same problem you have with Cole Keith. Where do you put him defensively? Where do you have the ability to put him? Because, look, Winsteel has struggled at second base. He tends to have the yips. He has decent range, but it's the simple play he struggles with. So then goes in the outfield, and the outfield has been pretty serviceable. He has played center field. He's played the outfield. And he's held his own. So there's some, but then again, where are you going to put him on the outfield up on the major league team? Tigers have a problem here right now. And I think, I think really it's, do you give just Keith a chance to let him play a third? Or do you let Justin Henry Molloy, who did, I believe, started at third today? That's a question that that really Scott Harris is asking himself right now, because, and Michael Mayer in the YouTube chat said it correctly, there is it's a platoon. It's been a platoon situation. Matt Vierling hasn't gotten it done. I still like Matt Vierling as a hitter. And Bloodright, thank you for the $5. I appreciate that.
Off the Frickers building.
Exquisite.
You have a situation here where, and even add Eddie Leonard to the situation, add this to the scenario. I mean, you would not know he's a new to AAA. And good evening, Aiden. Good to see you in here as well on the YouTube chat. Eddie Leonard, 8-for-17 this week, two home runs. One of them was a monster shot. And he's also getting on base as well. He puts himself in that situation. Tigers have to really, for the first time in a long time, and Mark Urosh said this earlier, he texted me this, and he's right. Toledo has some legitimate prospects, legitimate you have to make some really tough decisions here in the next couple days. September 1st is when they make the final call up. So Evan Woodbury of M Live mentioned that more likely, and I agree with him, and it makes a lot of sense that Mason Englert will, because he's also Rule 5, he can't stay in Toledo forever either. So, and I think with the way the bullpen's been taxed, especially after getting their asses kicked, they're going to be shorthanded. So you would think that they would probably bring him up in the next couple days or so. And Joyce, I agree with you on that. He says, if the Tigers don't feel that Ibanez and McKinstry are part of the future, we need to part ways and bring prospects up. Again, apologize for the voice. Still fighting off if you missed it earlier, I fighting off a bronchitis infection. Similar to COVID, but it's not. Yeah. Anyway. Fun times. I think it's one of those things where Shortani can't hold down the fort in the pen. No, Joe. And Joe, I look forward to seeing you on Friday in Erie. I'll be out there at Erie to watch Paul Skeens pitch out there. So I'm looking forward to it. As the Tigers have to make some tough decisions here. And I would agree, though, Ibanez and McKinstry don't seem like they'll be part of the future. Although Ibanez, I mean, one of the things that somebody pointed out to me was Ibanez has been in terms of war, has not been like a player that has hurt the Tigers war-wise. He's a guy who's held his own, and he's been a guy who defensively, I mean, he has made some, you know, some bad plays here and there, but who hasn't? But he was at one point over a one war. Now he's back to 0.8. But still, if there's not part of the future, then I agree with you. This is the time to do it. They did that with Eric Haas. I mean, Haas, he's a local guy. There's a big story, and I'm glad that Cleveland picked him up. And Cleveland, from all accounts, from what are my sources and my guys over at Prospect site told me, that Cleveland really regretted that he was out of their system, and he made some good leeway over there, and he's back, and I'm glad for him. But in this case, the Tigers, I mean, they picked up Carson Kelly, but I mean, Dylan Dingler had a pretty decent week too, and we'll get to him a little later. But then also Ryan Kreidler, 6-game hitting streak, 7-for-20 for the week. He looks like he's back in the swing of things a little bit. Andre Lipsius had a pretty good week, 9-for-19, had 2 home runs, only struck out once. He's on the 40-man roster. But let's give Winsel Perez and him and Andre Lipsius, it's like a coin flip right now. You're going to have to either make a trade, or they have to do something for this, because Toledo's fun to watch right now, because their offense has just been, like I said, 68 runs this week. 68 runs. Just insane. You went by the Toledo Rockets Louisville Cardinal game, essentially, was on Tuesday night, exactly what it was. They won by 3 touchdowns. I'm bad at math. They won by 2 touchdowns. 3 touchdowns. What is wrong with me? Okay. Anyway, they won 24-10. Then on Saturday, they won 16-2 and 10-3. They scored double digits 3 times this week. That's a brutal team. That is brutal. That game on Tuesday took forever. We were getting clips for that. Chris and I were taking turns for that all night. On the pitching side of things, star-wise, Sarah Gibson Long, who we just had on the podcast on an interview series. You can check it out on our channel at YouTube. Go to Tigers Minor League Report and go to our interview series. And Sarah Gibson Long talked about essentially throwing 3 new pitches. And it was really good. It was really fascinating to hear him talk about how he's been sequencing different a little bit and how he has the ability now to get out left-handers. And so good stuff from him. He could talk technical all day long. It was interesting too, because Chris did a little background on the fact that he was a swimmer in high school. And so that's kind of different. Whereas I think, at least from my experience, you see people specializing in one sport seems like more and more versus two sports. And to see swimming in there, that's a cool thing to see. So, but yeah, you can check that out there. And Olavigan, who pitched today, he only had one strikeout, but he did a really good job of keeping them off balance, by the way. Saw your Gibson Long, by the way, because somebody tried to point you out last week that I said it incorrectly. So, but thank you, Stan. Yeah, it was, again, he was very, very generous this time. We have one more player interview series to come up on Wednesday. We're timing it right now. We're trying to talk to Steph Stevenson, who recently got called up to West Michigan, and it's close to 70 steals. So that's, I mean, if you're listening, if you're familiar with Ricky Henderson, and 35 steal. All right, I'm making a bad Ricky Henderson reference. But the rest of the pitching staff, Montero struggled again a little bit. As much as I want to believe he wants to be a starter, I really want to believe that. He might be a reliever here, but hopefully he turns around and continues to learn. And Spencer Turnbull was outrighted to Toledo. It looks like he'll spend the rest of the season in Toledo. Yeah, doesn't look too well. 3-2 thirds inning, 6 hits, 3 runs. He did strike out 5. He's pitching a little better, but looks like the Tigers made their mind up. They're not going to call him up to showcase him at all. So unless something changes, who knows? Because this week the Tigers do play the Yankees for a 4-game series starting tomorrow. And as of, I believe it's Wednesday and Thursday, I believe it's Wednesday and let's see here. Let me double check this. So Olson pitches tomorrow against Servino. Scooble goes on Tuesday. Wednesday's TBD and Thursday's TBD. So we'll see what happens there as the Tigers try to shuffle up the rotation against the Yankees. And the Yankees come to town. And why do I think that Montero could be a reliever, Stan? Is because just talking to some people in the organization, is that kind of stuff to where if he excuse me, if he can execute a slider well, then I think he'll be I think he could be a two pitch pitcher if he doesn't get that change up down. So, but a lot of people like him in the organization as a reliever too. So, Scott has, I mean, again, I think the fastball slider plays up pretty well. If you can't execute that changeup on a consistent basis, although the pitch is getting better, then you might end up being a reliever. That's a kind of, the spin stuff he has on his slider. Again, some of the people in the organization think he could be a reliever. TBD has logged in a bunch of innings this year. Scott, with the question here, do you think Mike Rothenberg is going to end up with West Michigan or back to Lakeland? It was strange, Scott, by the way, that him ending up back on the developmental list, I thought he did pretty well. I mean, he's third or fourth in the org in home runs. I know he's a little advanced for his age, but still, it was a surprise to see him back over there. Defensively, he's fine. I don't know. I hope that he does end up in West Michigan. I think West Michigan could use some more catching help, but we'll see what happens. But I was very surprised to see him on the developmental list. All right, let's move on here. All right, so if anybody else has any questions about Toledo, we can move on here shortly, or we can continue on to Erie. And actually, I'm going to get something to drink while I'm going to slide over here to my fridge. I'm right here for a second. And you know what? We'll play a highlight because, yeah, Scott, that left me kind of confused there, because I think he's done enough to, he's not been a detriment at all to in terms of Lakeland or anything like that with the rotation. So I don't know. It's some of the things when they've gone to that I've kind of not understood that at all, but it is what it is. So let's again and. There's a lot of comments about why Justin Hammer-Loy are not up in the defense, everything. No problem at all, Scott. I'm glad to answer that question. Is anyone better than Vasquez? In double A, I don't know, Lionel Lodgecker might give Vasquez a run for his money. We'll talk about him in a second, but I don't know. That's another one where I'm kind of like, yeah, there is a, you know what? Tyler said it best. And I've been saying this for the last few weeks. The Tigers have a good problem right now. They actually have organizational depth, and they actually can trade that. because they have their guy. I mean, if you think about it, before we go to Erie, let me pause that for a moment while I get something to drink. Thanks, guys. Like I said, doing a solo show, never done it before. All right. Scott Harris has his guys. There's still a lot of the Avila influence in here. And the Tigers also have their analytics guys. Guys that they chose between Jay Satori and the rest of them. And we'll see how that shakes out, because they are probably high on some of the Al Avila guys, case of point, Marker Meadows, what have you. But yeah, they're going to have to make a trade. They're going to have to trade at some point here. So it has to be. And R1, look, in terms of like, well, left-hand relievers, Andrew Magno would come to mind, but the problem is he's too inconsistent. And he does have big league stuff. You could see him there. Mango could do it too, but he walks too many batters, so that's the big problem. He can control his walks a little better, sure. But Lockhart, yeah, I would throw him in the bunch there too. So, thank you, Steve. Steve Cook is watching from home right now. Sean Gunther. Oh, I forgot about Sean Gunther. Wolf is doing good. We'll get to Erie. Let's get to Erie. Let's just get to Erie, because there's plenty to talk about in Erie this week. And I just talked to Chris. He said he's going to be joining soon. So all right, continue on here. So yep, I mentioned that earlier, that the spot did clear. So Erie had a pretty tough week in terms of their opponent. They had, first and foremost, they had Bowie come in, and they had the Jackson Holiday experience in, and Bowie has been, along with Norfolk, the AAA affiliate, fun teams to watch play, because Baltimore is stacked. And by the way, they're not a first place tie. They have a 2-game lead in first place. So right now, as it stands, Erie has potential to win the first half and second half title. West Michigan has a chance to get to the playoffs. Lakeland has a chance to get to the playoffs. And that'd be the first time since 2018 when the Gulf Coast Tigers, West Michigan, and I want to say Erie went to the playoffs. Toledo, Doug Minkiewicz. Remember him? Oh, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. Minnesota Twin icon. Luis Santana. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know where his power is. I mean, he is a built guy. When you see Luis Santana in person, he is all muscle. He's a short dude, but generates power. And he has 17 home runs in 17 games. And he had 3 more home runs this week. Extra base power coming out of nowhere. I'm not complaining about it whatsoever. I mean, it is remarkable. They're getting that kind of production. Jace Young also had a really good week. Had another home run. 7-for-19. Justice Bigby, 25th multi-hit game. And yeah, that's... Yeah, we'll get to Hurdler in a second, too. We'll talk about his performance. He had a really good performance, too, this weekend. And Bigby, again, is a straw that serves a drink. And a lot of also call him up to Toledo. Why? I understand that you want him to advance to the next level to see what he can do. But if he can help Erie in the playoffs, that helps the franchise. That helps sell seats. That helps Erie. It helps his development, too, because... And look at the outfield right now in Toledo right now. Although, it is a hodgepodge, too. Ryan Kreidler's been playing the outfield. You have Malloy out there. Why am I drawing a blank all of a sudden on the outfield? Nick Solak out there. It's been, I don't know. Bigby is one of those guys you have to play on a regular. And to me, I just think taking regular bats for somebody like that doesn't do him any good. So... A lot of people, again, there's the debate will roll on about him too as well. But when we talked to him a couple weeks back, and there was something he didn't mention that I did not know until recently, that he had the same hitting coach as Aaron Judge and one Kerry Carpenter. I almost said Ryan Carpenter. Kerry Carpenter. And Nick Maton, too. Thank you. Maton is playing the outfield, too. Thank you to us. I didn't realize that because, again, it's always a hodgepodge out there between that and the rotation. All right. But, yeah, let me pull up a Jake. I want to pull up a Justice Bigby highlight for a reason. Because, again, it's just the way he doesn't. I think what it is about him, what I like about him is his approach at the plate is he takes what's, and I say this a lot. He takes what's given to him and just hits it. Now it sounds like a simple thing, but a lot of times people are trying to sell for power or whatever the case is. But I mean, what is the bat right here? Just sharply in the middle of base hit. Now the third hitting home. He will score without if he had to do an opposite field. Put it out there and just get a really good connection with it. But still, nevertheless, he just gets it done. He just puts the ball in play and he knows exactly when. And Luis Santana. This is what I'm talking about. It's just all muscle. This quick back.
Santana hits one high and deep to left center. A long way back. That
would be one.
This will tie the game. Here comes
and Justice Bigby probably has the best game. Probably one of the best games out there, honestly. Next to his name that came up on Perfect. Not Perfect Game for Mac and Kurt earlier today. And Johnny Dickshot. There's a name out there named Johnny Dickshot, and it's a real baseball name. So, anyway, let me get to Herder. Let me ask you a question. Chris is going to join us here in just a few minutes. So, I got confirmation from him. They're high on Hurler, but to the point of putting him in AAA at this point, again, the same with Bigby. I think they're going to keep that rotation together. They're going to need him for the playoffs. And Toledo, I think that if the injuries were different, if the Tigers weren't so devastated by injuries, I think Toledo would be a little different case this year. But their ERA as a team is like six. It's like 6.1 or 6.15 or something like that. I forgot the exact number, but I think he'd be there by now if it wasn't for the injuries, honestly. He's pitched when he's good. I mean, he picks his spots. He's good. I mean, he started when I saw him in Akron last week. He struggled off the gate a little bit, but he came back. He's just like, to me, he reminds me of Wilmer Flores this year where he'll bulldog through a start sometimes when he doesn't have his best stuff. So that's good to see a lot. And Bigby's been selling shirts and he's been doing merch and he's been a really popular request out in Erie. That's good to see. But it's one of those things where I think that Tiger fans, he'll start the season in Toledo and they also have to make a Rule 5 decision on him too. There's a lot of tough Rule 5 decisions. All right, back to the slides though. I really love the slides. I love the slides. Chris Myers, another week. Good strong week, 8-for-23 and home run, 17th home run. He'll probably hit 20 home runs this year, more than likely. And then you have Ty Madden, who, and this is well timed because we were just talking about this, is maddening. The Ty Madden drives us all crazy. And Chris Brown joining me on this podcast. Chris, thank you. Sorry, this is the longest I've ever spoken by myself.
Yeah, ever. Go ahead, Jacob. Take a break, take a drink, do what you got to do. I imagine you are you just finishing up here with Seawolves?
We're talking about Seawolves. We just got into pitching the Seawolves. Gotcha. You and I were talking earlier about how maddening is Ty Madden.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, today was kind of, I think we talked about it before, like the average Ty Madden start seems to be about 5 innings, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Every now and then he looks dominant, like he did in the first start of the year. Is a couple times since then, like he did in the first 4 innings today. 4 hitless innings with 8 strikeouts. Then he comes out in the 5th and it's home run, walk, double. I think he actually may have given up one more run on a sac fly. You know, he got out of it, but it's that's just kind of who he is, unfortunately. There's a lack of consistency there from start to start, from inning to inning, unfortunately.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things where, especially I think with Bowie too, you have to, he got to face one of the best offenses in the Eastern League this year. And so, I think that's one of those things where I think sometimes he tries to be too fine. You know what I mean? Like, it might be more of a mental thing with him, but he still struggles against lefties. When he tries to go in on lefties, it continues to be a problem.
Yeah. And, you know, we saw Sawyer Gibson Long have those same issues and basically develop, in his words, he developed basically three new pitches to help counteract that. And they weren't all for the lefties, but that's what he's done this year. And Ty Madden has all those pitches too. They just not in, not consistent enough to make them work to get lefties out.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem. Andrew Miller says, is Lansing still trying to get the Tigers AA affiliate? Heard this might be in the works for the people responsible in Lansing. That's news to me. I didn't know that. Did you know anything about that, Chris?
I've not heard anything about that. You know, it would be convenient for us, that's for sure. But you know, we certainly love the people out in Erie. We would, it'd be a bummer to have them not be a part of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I think these minor league development contracts are for a decade now, right? So I don't think that's even a possibility until 2030. I think Lansing Stadium could hold a double A team.
Definitely.
Right? It's got the capacity and it's pretty solid there. I don't know if they have quite the, no, they've got the suites. Yeah. I mean, that's caliber. So theoretically they could do that. I mean, who knows? Maybe one day it's, Tigers, high A is in Midland and double A is in Lansing and triple A is in Grand Rapids, but, probably not likely.
Yeah. And by the way, I think out of all, like, I really doubt Great Lakes is one of the best facilities out there. Honestly, that is very underrated. When you go out there, Dow Field, it is, to me, severely underrated. The way the layout is, how they have everything kind of the corridors laid out, and then the suite area, fantastic, fantastic. The broadcasting area too is just top notch over there. So,
and they have those like underground tubes to help pump air to dry the field quicker after rain.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I'm not expecting Lansing to become the Tigers AA affiliate anytime soon.
Yeah, Erie's a great destination for a lot of reasons. I mean, Erie, I love Erie. I honestly, like, the last 3 years, it's been such a great experience. Every time I go out there, and I think one of the things that is cool about Pennsylvania as a whole is it's a really great minor league baseball. It's a great baseball state. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, there's something about being a Kaiser and all that stuff. And then the connection with Cleveland, all that too. It's pretty fascinating how that all works. So, because you don't see that Michigan people are like, screw you, Ohio, screw you, Pennsylvania.
But, well, yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. Like a city like Erie, we were talking to Isaac about it. Like, you know, it's like split three ways for fandom between the Bills, the Browns, and the Steelers in football.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, in baseball, I don't know. I mean, it's probably Pirates, but there might also be, you know, Guardians fans and probably some Tigers fans because, you know, the AA affiliates there. So,
and a lot of times, too, there's a lot of Pirate gear that I see around. See, when you go out to UPMC Park, there, I mean, and Joe, who's one of our regulars,
one group of Lions fans.
There you and go. One group of Lions fans. Yeah, there is always one group. And there's Joe right there. Joe is, I believe, he grew up as a Pirates fan. So there is, I don't understand why people get so upset that, you know, if the Tigers, or excuse me, if Erie's going to promote that Paul Skeens is in town, for example, why would they make a big deal about that? I mean, everybody else knows who else is there. They know Jace Young is there. So
yeah, it's minor league baseball. They're trying to get as many people to the park as possible. You get the number one pick from this year's draft, who's going to play for the, you know, the closest pro team in the state, the closest MLB team in the state. You're going to promote it. You know, you're not going to say like, hey, let's all come out and celebrate this guy, but come out and see him before he's in the big leagues, right? Like, it makes total sense. It's, but you know, if you're a fan of that team or fan of the players on the team, obviously you might be like, what about us? But yeah, well, we promote you guys five times a week, six times a week, every game, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's going to be
some people that are upset.
Yeah, there's going to be a big crowd there Friday. I mean, literally, I'm probably going to have to leave. I was thinking about leaving even Thursday at this point because Friday's going to be insane, but we'll see. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it'll be another. This will be actually, you know what? I just thought about this. It'll be the second Labor Day weekend. I'm in Erie, so we were there last week, Labor Day weekend, remember?
Was that Labor Day?
Yeah, it was Labor Day.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. We're also complaining about the charges. Remember the hotel charges got a little high?
All I remember is, I mean, that was when we stayed in the Super 8.
Yeah, that was the Super 8. That was the weekend of the horror show. So, but Joe says, yeah, he moved to Pittsburgh so he can, yeah, so Pirates and, yeah, there's a lot of hodgepodge there. But anyways, getting back to the pitching, Chris, go ahead, continue on. I'm going to.
So you're talking about Madden, you know, Lockhart, you had the great graphic you did today about how good Lockhart has been basically since the jump, since he showed up with Erie. It sort of began with, I want to say, was it New Hampshire? He was in New Hampshire or Hartford that he like randomly struck out nine guys over five innings. Like, wait a minute. And then he's just been good since then. He had one or two rough outings. One was in relief. I don't remember who it was. It in relief of Fido or somebody like that.
I think it was against Harrisburg too. I think it was Harrisburg.
Yeah. And, but since then, yeah, look at that. You got the numbers right there. 11 starts, 4-2, 2.81 ERA, 64 innings, 77 strikeouts. Giving up three runs or less in nine of his 11 starts. He's been outstanding for him. And we talked about it before, like the stuff doesn't necessarily jump off the page, right? It's like 90 to 93 fastball, a couple different breaking balls, and he was working on a split change. But the breaking balls, he locates everything. And this is kind of where I am with pitching at the double A level. It's hard for me to know which guys are just guys and which guys are legit. Like, because last year, two of the best pitchers in Erie were Chance Kirby and Austin Bergner, right?
Right.
And they didn't have crazy stuff, but they were pitching consistently well. And this year, Chance Kirby retired, and Austin Bergner has been struggling ever since he went up to AAA last year. So, I hope that Lockhart can work out and become kind of like a Tyler Alexander type, like, you know, lower velocity, but, you know, pitching lefty. But I don't really know. I have no idea if he's in the plans for that or not. But he's certainly given himself a better chance by pitching this well.
I will say this, though. I think the big difference between Lockhart and those two you mentioned is the credit to the Tigers scouting department on finding him in looking at his number, looking beyond his numbers. Because this is, again, this is why whenever you read a prospect report, and they're just giving the numbers, and they're not giving any insight on the numbers. So, for example, if they were saying, well, he's got an 8.44 ERA. Okay, but where is he playing at? Okay, so he's playing in the Texas League. So we know that's a hitters-friendly league. So we know for a fact that pitching numbers are going to be a little more obscure. Same thing with anybody that comes over from the PCL. If you're in the Pacific Coast League, if you play for Oklahoma City, you're a Dodgers affiliate, and you're batting 375, that's maybe going to translate, it won't translate exactly the same on the major league level. So that's why sometimes like guys like Trace Thompson or something like that, for example, they're hitting really well in a higher level, higher sea level or whatever the case is, whatever you're playing in a different league, you always have to consider that. And I give credit to Tiger Scouting here on this. They saw something with him and he told us himself he was working on a split. That's also another interview you can have in our series, and I thought he did a really good job of presenting that he was throwing a split finger, which is why he was kind of opening up a little bit. Tyler Parker with a really interesting scenario here. We'd love to see the Tigers go get a package, get a proven legit second baseman that opens up a package deal with Jace Young to acquire a frontline starter. It's not a bad idea.
It kind of depends on who we're talking about, who are the legit second baseman out there. I haven't really considered trading for second baseman. Marcus Semien, I suppose, right? But that's not going to happen. Who else is Ozzie Albies? Not sure if that's going to happen. I'm trying to think. Yeah. I'd have to look up to see the other legit second baseman that are out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is interesting now because I do. People always talk about like, hey, why don't we trade some of our pitching for bats? And that teams just don't do that. Teams, for the most part, unless they're really ready to compete for the World Series, they don't trade any of their bats for the most part, right? Like it's just the way it goes. You trade pitching, but if the Tigers are at that point where they actually have some surplus bats that people like, then yeah, I'd be fine with them going after, you know, a front of the rotation starter. But yeah, I don't know. It would be tough to figure out the kind of package to do that. And that always feels like something, I don't know. Like I wouldn't mind them doing that to try to kick off a window of contention, but it feels more like the final move when you're contending, right? Like that's the Justin Verlander trade when you need that ace to get you over the top. But yeah, Geloff just got there in Oakland and he's been tearing it up. Like he literally just came up 6 weeks ago or whatever. And he's been doing really well.
Wouldn't it surprise me? You know what would be funny, though? I mean, they're like, wait, you're due for a raise? Trade him. That's what Oakland's been doing. Every time, literally, that's what Oakland's been doing, no matter what. It's a sad sack of crap of franchise. No, it's a sad part of my language, but it is a sad, shitty franchise. I'm sorry.
Sack of crap. It's one of those sack of crap franchises.
Sack of crap. Buy by the sack.
Yeah. I'm checking.
Normally, I don't swear, but I mean, just it's just pathetic. I mean, they literally... by the moon and the stars. All right, we're not going there.
Let's see. Mookie Betts, not getting him. Marcus Semien. Ha-Seong Kim. I would love Ha-Seong Kim from Padres, but probably not going to happen. Nico Horner, Bryce Stott, Albies, Ketel Marte, Luis Rice, Whit Merrifield from Toronto. You go get him, right?
No.
Nolan Gorman, I guess, would be one, but that's... I don't know. I don't know if the Cardinals are going to give up on him, but that is a name that we've speculated on before. People have, right? Nolan Gorman, former first round pick for St. Louis. They have Mason Wynn now. I don't know. They got rid of. Do they still have Tommy Edman? They still have Tommy Edman, right?
Yeah, I believe they have Tommy Edman. Yeah.
Slide Edman a second. I don't know. It's a possibility. I just, it's hard to find a way to get a proven anybody without giving up a bunch of talent.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that the Tigers may address with the abundance of bats that they have right now, maybe get some pitching depth. Because if there's one thing the Tigers do need, I mean, Casey Mize is throwing 96, 97, that's great. But I'd like to see that over 10 starts in a series of time. Because I will always be this way. I don't care. You might call me a stick, an asshole for this, but until I see somebody with at least 50 or 100 innings after an injury, then I'll breathe a sigh of relief. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You can get, you can get said, he threw off a mound. I don't care. I mean, it's good he made progress. Don't get me wrong, but.
So, I mean, I'm kind of getting there with Job now, right?
Yeah.
Like, he came back immediately and was throwing harder and the stuff looked crisp. You're like, okay, this is legit. But he's now up to probably 40 plus innings since getting hurt and no real issues. Maybe we'll talk about him in the next segment. So I agree with you, though. But again, with him, it's a back, and you never know when those things might pop up. But I think that was something that you made really clear a couple of years ago with Michael Fulmer. Like, everybody was counting on Fulmer to come back and be a piece of the rotation, and boy, did he struggle as a starter. And they just kept throwing him out there for three inning stints, and it wasn't until the next year when they moved to the bullpen that something clicked for him. And we've seen it with Turnbull, right? Turnbull hasn't done anything since coming back from his injury.
There's always that assumption that a guy is going to come back and ready to contribute. And I never understood that, because you look at you look at Tampa, for example. Tampa's had so many pitching injuries. Shane McClanahan's gone, I think, out for the year, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe so.
So I look at, for example, it starts with me as a youth, the White Sox rotation in the mid-90s. So Jack McDowell, Alex Fernandez, Jason Bure, and then those Mets teams in the mid-90s, too, that had really good pitching.
Paul Wilson and Isringhausen and the other guy.
And his son, no, it's not the same. It's not his son that's with the Tigers that got drafted.
No, that was Trevor Wilson. Paul Wilson.
Yeah, Paul Wilson.
There was the three-headed pitching monster for the Mets, and Isringhausen was the only one who had much of a career, and it was as a reliever, mostly.
Yeah. And I look at where I the reason why I never, it's never a constant, it's a sure thing is, I mean, outside of the Braves in the 90s, I mean, it's a rare thing to see a, thank you, Michael, Pulsifer. Or Bill
Pulsifer.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time. It's rare to see a three-guy rotation, a three-man rotation that stays consistently together for a long period of time. It really, I mean, it's hard to pull off. It really is.
We've said it before, but go back to the Tigers, you know, 2015, right? Daniel Norris, Matthew Boyd, and Michael Fulmer, right? That's more what it looks like, right? You get some guys pitching pretty well at times, then guys get injured, guys are inconsistent, and those were three. I mean, Fulmer and Norris were both top 100 prospects. Boyd wasn't, but he ended up being the best starter of the bunch, right? It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, and I look at the fact that you're really starting with Detroit. I just think, like you said, it's almost you have to have in every organization. Even you know what's funny to me is how good Cleveland was in the 90s. Outside of Charles Nagy, I'm trying to think of like that rotate. It was always like Charles Nagy.
Right.
Jared Wright.
It was Jared.
Yeah, Jared Wright. And then it was always free agents. It was Dennis Martinez. There was Jack Morris. There was Oral Hershiser. Let's see here. I'm trying to remember right now. But the core of some of the really good rotations, I mean, Greg Maddux was a free agent acquisition. I mean, you know, the core of that rotation was Smoltz, homegrown product. And yes, I know he came over from Detroit, but Atlanta made him who he is. And Michael's right. Moeller, Zito, and Hudson. And that was it, though. That was like 1 year. So it doesn't... No. I get more excited about seeing Carpenter, Torkelson, and Green, and Meadows more than I see pitchers. Because I just feel like pitchers, it doesn't... It never lasts as long as a core of positional players to me, so.
Yeah. We didn't finish there with... Brant Herder, decent start. One of his better starts recently. I don't know if they're trying to ramp some guys down because their innings. Like it seems like they haven't let him pitch six innings in a while. Because I don't think his pitch count was up too much. So five innings, three hits, no earned runs, one walk, six strikeouts. That's more of what we saw from him at the beginning of the year. He's a guy that at one point we thought was kind of a shoe-in to head up to Toledo, but he's struggling in the second half. So it's good for him to get another solid outing like that. And Madison... He had one rough outing, but came out today, I think, and pitched two scoreless, maybe walked one, four strikeouts. Basically, you know, took the eighth and the ninth and got the win, I believe, because the Seawolves had a nice comeback today, spurred by, as I imagine you already talked about it, Luis Santana and Bigby again.
Yeah, just the straw that stirs the drink. By the way, some names in that Cleveland bullpen era too, Eric Plunk. Michael Jackson, man,
I remember Plunk for sure.
And Michael Jackson too. The reason why is because every time that during SportsCenter, every time they did a Michael Jackson highlight, Chris Berman or somebody would go, "Hee hee." Oh, yeah. It's a bad idea. That was a bad idea. Oh, all is right.
Cold tonight?
Maybe.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, that's why I figured 9:45.
Oh yeah, no, I did. Yeah. I did bowl. And by the way. Bowled my best game, three series in a long time. I bowled so being sick apparently works. 150, 144, and 196. My last game was 196, and literally as I was taking off my shoes, as soon as it was like, gotta go home. All right, so West Michigan. I mentioned this earlier, Chris. 3 1-run losses, and West Michigan still maintains a 1.5 lead as they. Go to Lansing, a tough place to play. I don't know what is. We've talked about this before. Why is it in Lansing that it seems like it becomes like this circus show?
Yeah, it's usually an offensive explosion in Lansing. That it's just a hitter friendly park. I think because of the dimensions are a little bit funky, and I think also that giant batter's eye, and I think it tends to be windy. So. This is kind of reminiscent of last year. Last year, I don't think they had the lead, but they were in contention in the final 2 weeks. And it was, and this time, it's their game and a half up on Lake County and Fort Wayne, I think. And they don't get to play those two teams. So they don't, they just got to do their best here against Lansing and then at home against Great Lakes. But they're in the driver's seat right now. They just, have to go out there and win some games. But they've been, despite the rough record this week, they've been playing pretty well overall, certainly. And they have a more well-rounded team now, thanks to the addition of Seth Stevenson, which we'll talk about in a second. But I mean, the big name, Brady Allen, had a monster week. He's shoo-in to be player of the week, which I think he did earlier in the year, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, 12 for 22, two doubles, four home runs, eight RBI, six walks, two strikeouts. It's a guy that I think ordinarily everybody would be like, call him up, right? Call him up. He's been playing well. But, you know, they need somebody in the outfield there for them. West Michigan, Campos is still out with an injury. So, yeah, monster week for him. Really, another really good week for Luke Gold. 10 for 26, four doubles, two home runs, six RBIs, two walks, three strikeouts. He's rocking an 893 OPS since June 1st. You know, I remember, you know, in the offseason, we did like a mailbag. Somebody was like, who's the next Cary Carpenter? And we were like, well, listen, it's not going to happen. Those things are super, super rare. You don't get a Cary Carpenter more than once a decade. And then Justice Bigby happened, which neither of us predicted. I don't remember who I think my guess was Corey Joyce. I think you had Carlos Pena as a guy who might pop up from out of nowhere. It'd be good.
Yeah.
And Luke Gold, I wouldn't say is quite the same category because he's a fifth round pick, but he's a guy, those first 2 months of the year, I thought he was going to wash out. I thought he was going to be another Jack Kenley. I don't know if you remember him.
I do remember Jack Kenley, the UCLA guy, right?
Kenley was an Arkansas, I believe.
Oh, Arkansas. Okay. Yeah.
And he was like their eighth round pick and just immediately it was apparent that he couldn't hit. But Gold has really turned things around. He's been hit for power. He came up from Lakeland to West Michigan. He's probably got 30, 35 games in West Michigan now. He's hitting for more power and walking more and striking out less at the higher level.
We have a 22-year-old. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, I would say he's a 22-year-old, almost 23. So, you know, you'd like to see him up at AA as soon as possible, but that he's producing and improving makes me wonder if he might be a guy who might pop a little bit next year, but we'll see.
Yeah. There's definitely the case. And we found an audio of his last speech he gave to the guys at Lakeland.
Sunsets, pony. That's a goal. Keep it that way. It's a good way to be. I want you to ask Dally to look at one. I don't think he's ever seen a sunset. There's still lots of good in the world. Tell Dally, I don't think he knows. Your buddy, Johnny.
That's a tough
one. The Outsiders?
Yeah, The Outsiders. That's a good movie.
I think I read the book.
Yeah, the book? You never seen the movie?
Has he hit
me? You know who plays Pony Boy? Ralph Macchio.
Matt Dillon and
it's got the guy who played, so they have Ralph Macchio, Tom Cruise, Emilio Estevez,
Matt Dillon,
and God, who was the guy who was Pony Boy? Thomas C. L.
C. Thomas Howell?
C. Thomas Howell, thank you. C. Thomas Howell. Yeah. There you go. I jumped. Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry about the audio there. I think it was from Leif Garrett, the I Was Made for Dancing from 1977, 1979, and also one of the best behind the musics of all time was in that movie.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a classic, like, you know, coming of age story, right? But Luke Gold, like I said, you know, it's not a Bigby Carpenter situation, but he's a guy who's improved over the course of the year, so that's at least that has happened. And you got Seth Stevenson, 4 for 13, a double, two walks, a strikeout, scored four runs, stole three bases. He's got 65 steals this year. And I put there next to that, West Michigan has 60 steals total this year. They're easily last in the Midwest League. So yeah, if you take away Stevenson's three from them, he has eight more steals than the rest of the Whitecaps all year combined. And that just, I mean, he's immediately stepped into the leadoff role and then it's really changed the dynamic of that team because he's a little bit like Carlos Mendoza in terms of being able to get on base, but he's much, much faster. Mendoza is aggressive and, you know, will steal bases, but Stevenson's just a speed demon. So you got him batting first. You got Gold batting second, mostly. You got Allen batting third. It's, you know, Workman is down there doing his thing. So I don't know. I think they're well positioned heading into the playoffs now with a more balanced team.
Yeah, and what's interesting too about West Michigan, even with the fact that even 2-4 against Peoria this week, they are again like Toledo. Their offense has been at least keeping them in the games. They've been coming up with some clutch hitting. And Stevenson, by the way, I was talking about this earlier. We're going to have a chance to talk to him Wednesday if we could time everything right. Get a chance to talk to him. And really, the infusion from Lakeland has been not necessarily on the pitching side, but I mean, outside of course, Melton. But it is good to see some of the bats come up from Lakeland and really contribute when, in reality, I really, honestly, I think that was the most unexpected. I mean, to me, at least, that was an unexpected element.
Yeah, you know, and it was, they brought up Dom Johnson months ago, and he unfortunately hasn't done much of anything really in West Michigan. But as we talked, Luke Gold has come up and been a really nice bat for them, and Stevenson has come up and really helped. So yeah, it's, you know, for so much of this year we talked about how there just wasn't anything going on right in Lakeland. There wasn't much happening, and it's just a good reminder that it's a long season and things could change in the middle of the year to at the end of the year. Like, I don't think we didn't have Luke Gold in our top 30. I would probably try to sneak him in there now, but, yeah, it's the one guy, I guess we thought that might be coming up from Lakeland just hasn't really put it together. He had, and Christian Santana is who I mean, right. That
yeah,
he had a nice month, but, we'll see in the next slide that it's kind of back to the same old thing now, unfortunately. We didn't talk about any of the pitching there if we wanted to. I don't know if you wanted to.
I was talking about Dylan Smith, by the way.
Dylan Smith had a really nice start. He's in West Michigan for now. You know, that he was on there as a rehab assignment from Erie, but then they assigned him to West Michigan. I think this works out best for them. It's nice to see him go in six innings and you know, scattered seven hits, as they say, but nice. Only one earned run, six strikeouts, no walks. So that's definitely nice to see. And then Jackson Jobe with a new career high, six innings, which was also fun to see. He gave up two runs. One, he gave up, there was an error, and then he gave up a home run right after that. So the home run ball is still a bit of an issue for him. But again, that's just, it's because of the command. Sometimes he just leaves a pitch over the heart of the plate and it gets crushed. And that hopefully will iron itself out as he continues to get more innings. They did a tandem start with Melton and Pena. I don't know if they're trying to watch Melton's innings or if that just was the one that made the most sense to them. But he's got kind of a funny line. His last two starts, it's like nine innings pitched and like five hits, zero runs, and two walks and three strikeouts. Just like, he's not missing any bats, but he's also not giving up any hard contact. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, that is, you know what? Maybe it's also because with Melton too, maybe they're trying to see what he can do in a, I want to say, relief setting.
It's possible. I wouldn't think they want to do that just yet, but maybe, who knows? Like the one thing that I do worry about a little bit for the Whitecaps, if they head into the playoffs, is the bullpen. They've got some decent arms right back there. Trevin Michaels got some pretty nice stuff. Eric Pinales has a nice arm. Elvis Alvarado has a nice arm, but they're not consistent. None of those guys are consistent, unfortunately. Dario Gardea can come out and look like a lights out reliever, and then other times he'll come out and give up six runs. So if they want to go into the playoffs with Melton, it's like suddenly a power arm out of the bullpen, you know, because it, you know, if they don't think it'll hinder his development or whatever, and they think they can use that, then that's fine. But it would just be an interesting choice. You don't usually see that. Although I guess, you know what, we did in the playoffs last year, didn't we?
Yeah.
We saw, I think, Madden pitched briefly, and Herder and Wilt Flores were all kind of, at the end of the year, they were kind of bullpenning a little bit.
I don't remember. Melton was injured last year?
I'm trying to think.
Or coming off injury from 2022?
Oh. Well, he was drafted last year, right? Did he have he had an injury in college? I know he changed his delivery and his motion, but I don't remember if he had a, I don't think it was a serious injury, but it's possible that they might be watching his innings.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things too, that I just realized is West Michigan. I mean, there's always been the question of who's going to call up, who would Erie call up from West Michigan pitching wise. If West Michigan has a good chance to make the postseason. So Erie roster, all the rosters might stay intact. Good possibility for that.
Yeah. The only thing, I'm not sure if the playoffs start earlier. No, I think both teams have 2 weeks left, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, 70. So if he had 70, thank you, Michael. Michael said they had Milton had 65 innings in college and five in the minors. So just 70 innings, they probably don't want to increase that more than like 30, 35. So I don't know what he's at right now, but he might be getting close to 100. I will look. Maybe they're just they viewed this as maybe they want him pitching in the playoffs, but they didn't want him to go over his innings limit. So they are using now to curb that a little bit. Okay. I'm looking. He is at.
So while you're doing that, he's at Lakeland. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it looks like he's at 83. Does that sound right? 84 innings.
Yeah, 84. Let's quote Michael.
Yeah.
Michael's our kind of our admin in here anyway, so I would go with Michael. So Lakeland cleaned up Clearwater. Bad pun intended.
Clearwater has the best record in the Florida State League, I think, overall this year.
Yeah.
They got smoked.
Yeah.
Kind of fun.
And they're now up four on Clearwater and Bradenton, as Lakeland now is pretty much in the driver's seat for the playoffs. Once again, but what Lakeland does have is they have the best run differential so far among all the teams, and they've just been, and I think they, I believe, run score too. And so, but it is about the new guys. And this is where I will say this, props to the Lakeland Flying Tigers this week for doing some video for the first time in 3 years. 3 years, we've been seeing some video out of Lakeland, and the Flying Tigers, God bless you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it definitely helps because, you know, there's only so many times that we can post a screenshot of a box score or,
and it's
you know, cool. when, you know, you, or you'll get messages from Sherry and stuff that are great, but, you know, she can't be down there every game. And so it is
she's nice. She's actually in town this week, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was nice to see video of Max Clark's first double, and I think that video of some other stuff going on. But yeah, what's kind of wild about it is they were playing tremendously well with all those other guys, and when they brought in these new draft picks, they sent a lot of those guys packing, as it were, back down to the Florida Complex League, which is not playing anymore. So guys like Manuel Sequeira and Mike Rothenberg, who'd been like their big power bat, and he went to the development list.
Yeah, we got a question about him earlier. Scott asked a good question. Why is he not, like, why was he sent down the developmental list? And I thought he played well enough to at least go to West Michigan or stay or Lakeland. I was really surprised by that, Chris. I mean, there has to be a little more to that.
You know, to me, I mean, this is the guy who was drafted, I think he's a senior sign, drafted same, like, one round ahead or behind Josh Crouch. So he's got to be 24, if not pushing 25, I would think. And they may just not view him as a guy who's really part of the future. Even despite all the power, he's still striking out like 35% of the time, I think. And so they might just say, you know, thanks for your help. You know, we want to see some of the other, we want to see Briseño catch, even though, as Jeff told us, he's not really a catcher. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he had some aches and pains. They just needed a place to put him for now. And it could be that, oh, there's a play from Matt Walker.
It's a great play. Nice,
nice diving stop by the pitcher and throw from his belly, I guess from his knees. It may be that putting Marothenberg on the development list means that they can bring him back. Whereas if you transfer somebody to like the FCL, you can't. I don't know. That would be sort of the minor league roster minutia that I'm not super well versed on. But yeah, I guess they just really wanted to get new guys in. So as Apple Wastidas is gone, a bunch of the pitching went away. They brought in the new guys, and it's kind of funny. They all had very similar weeks, it seems. Max Clark was 3-for-10 with a double, 3 walks. McGonigal was 3-for-10 with a double. I think Briseño was 3-for-11 with a double. Like, they all had solid weeks, which was nice to see. Brett Callahan was okay. John Peck didn't play much, but he performed fairly well. Cole Turney had a pretty good week. So, and then some of the pitching, we saw another really strong short outing from Jaden Hamm. I think he's got 5 hitless innings in the Florida State League now. Here's the, is that the McGonigal? No, that's the Clark double.
No, that's McGonigal.
That's McGonigal. That's his first, I think he doubled in his first plate appearance there. Yeah, so Jaden Hamm has pitched well. You know, he was a draft pick this year. And then there's the kind of the secret guy, not secret so much, but Yosper Sanchez is an interesting name to remember. He's a guy that we saw, I think they called him up from the Dominican Summer League up to the Florida Complex League, right? Maybe I'm mistaken on that, but he popped up randomly, and then we were able to see him pitch. And I thought it was Marco Jimenez. He was sitting 96, 97 with a pretty good curveball. So he's definitely an interesting relief arm, potentially, down the road. I think he's like 22 already. But he's a guy that hadn't, you know, these guys who pitch in the Dominican Summer League, we don't know anything about them. We could look at their numbers, but have no idea what they have. And then I saw this kid pitching. I'm like, whoa, that's a big arm. So,
yeah.
So that's from Florida Prospect Report.
Yeah. There's Max Clark.
That was his, so he got an RBI single there, I think, to tie the game. That was his first RBI in Lakeland. It's nice to see these guys getting a taste of full season ball. You know, it's the end of the year, but again, they might be playing playoff games, which it's going to be a cool, meaningful experience for them.
Yeah. And that's why, like I said, you don't want to necessarily call them up, and because the playoff experience is valuable. And so Michael's sharing the link with, I think Lynn just goes, hey, Ryan, listen, I need some stuff. I'm not retired technically. So here, give me what you got. Well, did you see any of the players play? No. Okay, it's not important. All right. I don't need to do that.
He's got Garko's number, and Garko will talk to him, which is it's nice.
Ryan Garko does not return our email. He doesn't. Apparently, he's very media shy. So I did talk. Like I said, when I confirmed him last year, I remember calling him off guard. He's like, "Oh, I'm familiar with you guys. You guys are good."
Yeah.
Like, so, come on the podcast? Oh, maybe we'll see.
Yeah, some guys don't like to talk. They don't want to talk to us. They don't want to talk to other people. But yeah, it'd be interesting because, you know, we asked Jeff Potts about some of those guys down in Lakeland who were putting up numbers, and he gave us kind of the unvarnished opinion that he got from, he went down there with people to look at because based on the numbers, and he talked to scouts, and the scouts were not terribly impressed with Perseno or Clayton Campbell. I think he said Campbell's a two athlete, which is not ideal, but you know, the guy, if they're hitting, they're hitting. So maybe you can hit your way out of that.
Yeah. Speaking of not hitting, or anybody not hitting much off Tanner Coleheap, 4 innings, 10 strikeouts, 4 hits allowed. Yeah.
I mean, that's a guy with nasty, nasty stuff that you hope that he can rein it in enough to work out of the bullpen late innings, because it's a crazy sinker. It's a really good slider. So, big arm, yeah. Like 4 innings, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts. He did give up 4 hits and 2 runs, but again, sometimes that's just self inflicted. Him not being able to hit the strike zone. But is it a bobblehead?
It's Billy Joel Armstrong. It's the official
Green Day Funko Pop.
Green Day Funko Pop. It's part of the official part of the podcast. No.
Oh, all right. And I guess we didn't mention, so that there were a couple guys who were down there who've been down there for a little bit, who you know, didn't have great weeks. They were okay. Santana, as I was saying earlier, kind of teasing that he's back to his old thing. 1 for 19. The one hit was a home run, then 3 walks and 9 strikeouts. And it's just kind of a bummer.
I think he's pressing again, you know.
There's an opinion we've heard a couple times, like, hey, get him. He's not seeing enough strikes. You know, get him up to West Michigan. It's like, well, some of these other guys aren't having any trouble. So this is what Lynn said or Garko said. Very adamant. Persino is a catcher. Also said Campbell's a good athlete.
Campbell is a good athlete. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he is. Clayton Campbell, at his young position, he was playing in the Australian League. He played catcher. He played third base too, as well.
Yeah. Listen, I haven't seen either of them play. I was going off. Jeff told us what he heard from scouts. I guess Garko has a different opinion. We'll see what plays out over the next year or so. We were excited about Campbell. He's a doubles machine, and Briseno just keeps hitting, right? And he gets on base and he hits for power. I put it on the next slide. We didn't really need it, but that Briseno is, you know, top 10 in a bunch of categories in the FCL. It's a little bit of, ended up with the second best OPS in the complex league, third in hits with 55, third in doubles, sixth in home runs, third in RBI. Samuel Gill with, top 20 OPS, top 10 in hits, 12th in walks, 22nd in steals. I just put that on there. But, I don't know. Like, but here's the thing. We've learned this about other people in the organization, and I think it's normal for the people involved in the development and the coaching of these players. They're not necessarily going to tell you the truth. They're not going to tell us the truth, the unvarnished, 100%. This is what the guys are bad at. This is what they're good at. They don't usually do that. So we kind of have to use our detective skills to figure out when they're being honest and when they might be, when they might be trying to tell us what they think people want to hear.
Or say, give us a tell. Like, we figure there's one person we know. We talked about this. Wait, I'm not going to say who it is, but we can tell their tells.
Yeah. And that's just a matter of us talking to these people in the system more and trying to figure it out. And then going back to Mermy Banks and thinking, okay, this is what happened. This is what we think. Maybe Garko is being 100% honest. I don't know. I mean, Briseño is 6'4" and a giant, and it's tough for the guys like that to catch. So yeah. I'm gonna remain skeptical until we see it.
Yeah.
No.
I
welcome everybody else to believe Garko.
I think we're in a unique position because Lynn is a reporter, he's a journalist. We're kind of a hybrid of things, if you will. And we're wrong. And that's not kind of humble brag or anything like that. It's okay to be wrong about things, but it's just sometimes I think I get irritated sometimes when it's because they ask somebody versus what they see. I think I'd rather, what is it? The Tommy Boy line. I'd rather ask.
Okay. You get a good look at a T-bone by
stick up your head up a bull's ass, but I'd rather ask the butcher's word for it.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't, and again, like, yeah, we're certainly not perfect at all. I was kind of pushing the Josh Crouch hype train last year, and that came to a screeching halt, and it's just the way it is. It's what happens with prospects and development, and who knows, maybe those guys are great athletes. Maybe, like I said, it things change over time. They're both still pretty young. I think Campbell's 21, Sano's 18. I think he's 18. I think he's younger than McGonagall. So I wouldn't be like, disappointed or not excited about those guys. I just would pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah. Just, like I said, everybody sees things differently. And so it's all about perspective. Like I said, sometimes when they're just like they're a prospect expert because they're told by the team information versus seeing what they see. Yeah. Like, for example, I think I could think of a more recent example of Troy Melton comes to mind. Troy Melton wasn't a prospect, and then we were kind of noticing that the velocity was there, and then we confirmed it but then the first thing that Jeff said without us provoking it was talk about Troy Melton, how everybody's all high on him. But he wasn't a household name by any necessarily, but we saw the movement. We saw that was capable of it. And it's better than to get that than 4 months, 4 weeks later when people come around about just as big people. Hey, what do I know?
Yeah. And Michael Myers said Campbell's 19. I appreciate that, Michael. I was confusing him with Daniel DeMonte, the Italian who has ridiculous. He actually does have kind of ridiculous stuff, but the traditional numbers are not, like, I don't know if it's ever going to work for him because he can't throw strikes and he gives up runs, but like
command's not there yet.
It's his fastball is like 2600 RPM. The cutter is like 2900. It's nuts, but he can't command any of it. So, and he's 21. So I think I was confusing him with Campbell, but yeah, like again, it's cool that these guys are getting a taste of full season ball. And I expect to see them back there next year.
Yeah.
But, if they keep producing, you move up, and if you keep producing, you move up, and then you shut people up, right? So,
yeah,
it's tough to know with guys in rookie ball and low A.
Exactly, and it's Well, hopefully next year, if we can get proper funding, which is why we ask you to donate to the PayPal and the Super Chats, that we can go see Lakeland and go down. Like, my goal next year is to raise, by the beginning, end of the year, raise enough money, like $3,000, $4,000, to cover us for the entire year for travel costs and then site costs and all that stuff. That way we can go, we're like, hey, guys, you guys going to Lakeland? Hell yeah, we are. Boom. So,
And we're hoping that Lakeland will be on the app next year so we can watch them much, much, much more.
Yes.
But obviously it always helps to see guys in person.
It's true what he said. I mean, he says in here, I'm sure in an article they would not be very critical of their own players, but they want to push value in case of trades. Just found it funny from the reports we heard. Yeah, I did find it funny too. It was just like, okay.
Hey, maybe they believe in these guys. Maybe they obviously, I think they would know more about, like, you might look at a guy like Campbell or Briseño as a scout, right? And look at him and go, that's not an athletic body. He's not a good mover or whatever. But the Tigers have, I'm sure, all the actual internal testing, right? They probably know what they look like off force plates and their blast motion and all that stuff. They might know that actually this guy's an explosive athlete. He hasn't gotten into it yet. I don't know. But yeah, I just generally, teams don't say anything negative about their prospects, like, ever in public, right? I'm sure they tell them all sorts of bad stuff in private. We've heard many instances of this, but in public, they're not gonna down any of their players because it's a bad look.
Yeah, it is a bad look. So, but all right, Chris, was there anything else you wanted to cover this evening?
Not really. I mean, I missed the first. So you're talking, I'm sure you had fun talking about Toledo putting up all sorts of runs, and I don't know if you discussed the whole, like, there's an extra spot on the 40 man now and who's going to
get it. Yeah, we talked about that a little earlier. Yeah.
And then I think, you're heading off to Erie on Friday.
Yeah.
You're going to catch Paul Skeens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be in Lansing at least twice, if not three times this week. We're going to try to go catch Job and Smith, I think, hopefully. And then I'm going on Friday, no matter what. This was like a family thing. I'm going, my son and all his buddies, they're all going to a Lugnuts game on Friday night. It just so happens to be against the Whitecaps. And so I'm going to be there for that too. That's why I'm not going to be in Erie.
So Wednesday, I'm going to be at, Wednesday I'll be in Lansing with you. I think Wednesday we're going to go out there. So we'll catch the Steph Stevenson interview. Tuesday I'm going to be in Toledo because Sherry.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, I can't. Maybe I can't. And I can't. I'm a solo parent this week. Maybe I can pawn off my son on his grandma, but it's just the way. I want to bring him to some games too, but it's, Toledo. We'd be getting home at like 11, and that's a bit much for him.
Yeah.
Final week before school.
Yeah, that's gonna be a good road trip for Tyler. He's going to Chicago this week, watching the Cubs and Brewers on Wednesday, Tigers and Sox on Friday the 1st. Just be careful when you're in Chicago.
The way Wenzel's been playing, he certainly looks like the guy who would deserve the call up the most, but also just because of how versatile he is. We've talked about it. He can play the infield, he can play the outfield, he's a switch hitter, he hits for power now. He would 11 doubles. He's got more walks and strikeouts, or at least close, steal a base or two.
I was talking about this earlier, Chris. They have really tough decision here because Keith, again, had a really good week. Justin Hermoy also had a really good week. And Ryan Kreidler also had a good week. And Andre Lipsius, it was all of them. And we heard this from Parker Meadows. Meadows talk about this I was him. And I believe Scott Harris said this earlier in the week when I was down in Comerica. There's guys down there who are chomping at the bit. Like they believe they deserve it up here. And so, Jeremy, thank you for the kind words. We appreciate it. And and Jeremy, shout out to Jeremy, who's been running the Pick the Stick channel on our Discord. And so if you're on our Discord, it's free to join. There's no cost. And what you're probably asking yourself, what is Discord? What is, so basically it's a message board. So if you're familiar with the old, is that a good way to put it, Chris?
It's a chat room
Yeah.
To cross between like a chat room and Twitter, I would say less
bullshit than Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, for now, I guess the more people we get in there, the more likely that there's going to be some nonsense. We've had a couple things happening, but yeah, it's a good group of guys in there. There's, I think it's generally, yeah. I mean, listen, we talk sometimes about Lynn's seeming fascination with Cody Clemens and Ty Cobb said, according to Lynn, Stephen Moy and Ryan Strebe should be in the Hall of Fame. This is what happens. If you hype up minor leaguers too much, people will remember you for it and say, what happened to that dude? I will say this. Hasn't been a bad couple weeks for people who had Parker Meadows in their top five in the Tiger system.
Yeah. I wonder who that was. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now, will Parker Meadows sustain the way he's been playing? Seems unlikely, right? I don't think he's a 1,000 OPS player. But you're seeing a lot of why we had him, why we bumped him way up to begin the year, and why we kept him in the top five, because the floor is pretty high and the ceiling is pretty high too. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And like we bumped him down and it was because Job came back healthy, looking good. And because Clark is a really dynamic prospect, but Parker Meadows is, you know, could arguably be 6'5" Max Clark. Like it's just one of those things where I think people, I talked about it in the Motor City Metrics, and not to go way too off topic here, but Cole Reagans, the pitcher that the Royals got from the Rangers, he was a top 10 prospect in the Ranger system, but then missed 3 years because of various injuries and COVID. And so he just wasn't a prospect anymore. He wasn't on prospect lists anymore. And now he looks outstanding for Kansas City. It's like people, if you have a couple bad years, people just write you off, it seems. And I think that's what happened with Parker Meadows. But we were paying attention because that's kind of what we do.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like it's, you're supposed to pay attention. And that's exactly what it is. You're supposed to be paying attention. It's never like a 24-hour day thing sometimes.
Yeah. We talk about like nobody can pay attention to every player in every system. It's impossible. It's hard enough for us to pay attention to one system and get things right or close to right. So I don't blame everybody about that. But maybe if you want to rank some prospects, come ask us. But whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Baseball America. Or, you know, it's crazy.
Or Pipeline. I think they both had them outside their top 10. And it's just, yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Like I said, that's why it cracks me up about this. Again, it's not us being conceited. It's having, as what Deadly Ninja B said, the receipts. It's having the confidence to go out there and put ourselves out there on the line. We've been wrong. You can't get this right. You can't get every single prospect right, but you can't call yourself an expert when all you're doing is reciting from somebody that works for the team. It doesn't work that way to me. And that's what frustrates me. I sound like I have a bitter chip on my shoulder a little bit, but all in all, I'm just confident in our abilities. I had an incident this week, by the way, before we end the podcast.
Uh-oh.
Where it was more to do with Motor City Metrics, and they were kind of patronizing me. They were talking about how I expressed interest in saying, hey, for the off season by the way, I put the donation button in there for, it goes to, that's, it goes to our PayPal. So because YouTube takes out a certain percentage. So if you want to donate to that, our donation button's right there, or in the super chat as well. Anyway, the other podcast, they were talking about, I asked them, I volunteered to say, hey, I can produce, I can edit, or I can help out with college sports. As you know, college football and high school football kicked off this week.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just polite. And I knew they didn't listen to any of the shows or anything we've done. They said a really roundabout, polite, kind of like, thanks, but no thanks. And I picked up on it pretty quickly. And I responded like, just letting you know, .. I've been doing podcasts with Chris Network now for over 10 years. You don't really have to talk down to people like that. And I guess the lesson for all that is that it's the same kind of thing. Sometimes we've run into people where it's like, they kind of, it's like a curiosity thing. Like, oh, that's nice. And it's like, the people know, they know. And I'm grateful for the fans we have. I'm grateful for the people that tune in every Sunday night with us. And we've done this for week 20. And I'm just grateful for the fans we do have and the people that know, they know. And so that's all I'm saying. I'm grateful beyond 100. Like I said, Joe, for example, last time we were out, or one of the last times we were on Erie, actually it was, I forgot when it was last. We met Joe.
Beginning of the year, maybe even.
Yeah, I think it was the beginning of the year. Joe sat with us the entire game. It was fun. We were just sitting there talking baseball. I've met Stan. I've met some great people doing this. And I met Jeremy. I actually met Jeremy too. It's been fantastic. So for the people that know, they know. We're grateful. Thank you. They don't talk to us like we're idiots.
Yeah. Anybody who listens or interacts with us, we should. So.
Right. And I know. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back. I'm actually dropping a Winfield Perez article either tomorrow or Wednesday, State of the Farm or State of Farm. But we'll see you on the road here Tuesday, possibility to go to Toledo. Wednesday for sure, we'll see us in Lansing. Probably Thursday too at this point. Friday will be out in Erie. Chris will be out in Lansing Friday. And I'm trying to think of maybe going to Tigers game. I'm still a public risk to be, you know.
Well, yeah, and then you know, we've got definite plans to be back in Erie for the playoffs. There could be playoffs in West Michigan as well, so we're gonna have to work some things out there. I may be in Denver the weekend of the 17th.
That's so awesome.
That's kind of up in the air in a very strange way now. I'll tell you off the air.
Okay. No pun intended, because you're actually going to win to the Mile High City.
But so we're going to be all over the place. So we'll keep you guys updated. And if you are there, come hang with us. We enjoy that.
Shout out to you, Mitch. Mitch, you're the best. Buy the Page Giants book, because Mitch wrote it and he's a member of the Sabre, the Michigan chapter, and he's a good guy. So thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good week, everybody. I got to hear the story. Right? It's crazy. I'm going to hear.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.